It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Today we are continuing our series of interviews with candidates for the U.S. Senate with Braddock Mayor John Fetterman, known as much for his tattoos and his bouncer's physique as his Harvard master's degree in public policy. Mr. Fetterman has been called a wild card candidate in the Democratic primary. He has been the mayor of Braddock since 2004 and joins us now in studio to discuss his views on a variety of issues. John Fetterman, good to have you. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
If you have a comment or question for John Fetterman, you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email ESSPGH at WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH. I have lots of questions for Mayor Fetterman, but we'd also like to hear from you and hear your questions, comments, and concerns. Again, the number 412-246-2002. Mayor Fetterman, some have said you have done a good job as mayor of Braddock, but that you don't have enough experience to be a U.S. senator. When you hear that, how do you respond?
Well, I respond where I again, respectfully disagree. We've had a really a great run in Braddock, and that's just part of my work experience. And it really all is centered around confronting inequality. And long before it was a talking point, long before it made it into the central debate our policy is having, it's like you look, last night we had our presidential debate in Flint, Michigan. And Braddock is just a smaller version of Flint, Michigan. And these issues are at the forefront of the debate that our party is having. And that's what we've been working on for the past 15 years in Braddock. And I first came to Pittsburgh 20 years ago to teach GED classes in the Hill District in Pittsburgh. So, you know, all of these issues, race, community policing, Black Lives Matter, the enormous income inequality that exists in this country, you know, these are issues that we confront on a daily basis in Braddock that the other candidates in my race, and I'm not aware of any current race that can speak to it at that level. So, one of my other opponents has never even held elective office, period. It really comes down to biography, and everyone in this race is talking Black Lives Matter and our nation's war on drugs and income inequality and these issues. But there's, you know, really only one candidate, certainly in my race, that actually has the biography to back it up when we say these things.
And so what point did you have the epiphany that the day arrived and you said, you know what, I've got to go to the Senate. I'm not going to worry about running for Congress or the legislature. The Senate is where I need to be and focus my energies running for that.
Sure. Well, a big part of it is just my enormous gratitude and satisfaction with the job that I have as mayor of Braddock. It's a wonderful job, a wonderful community, and how lucky am I to be able to live where I work and work where I live. And there's really no separation between myself and my job, and I wouldn't want it any other way. But at the end of the day, when you bump up against the limits of your office and you want to take these issues that you care about to a bigger platform and a bigger arena, you have to run for an office like that. And I wouldn't have resigned my office if I had to run in this race. The ability to get to a big enough platform to be able to advocate on a national level is the only thing I would trade this job for. And the only reason I would do that is that I could still call these folks in Braddock my constituents, and I would be able to advocate on their behalf as well as all of the forgotten cities across Pennsylvania. And there's so many of them.
You've been described as America's coolest mayor. Can the cool factor help you in your Senate run?
Well, I don't read my own clippings, you know, one way or the other, and it's not a matter of a cool factor. I think it comes down to biography, and this isn't office shopping like my other candidates. I just didn't run for governor in 2014 and decide, hey, I'd like to run for the Senate. This is a race that's born out of a desire of mine to combat and work within the framework of confronting inequality in this country that started, quite literally 20 years ago.
But I guess I'm looking at what you're bringing to the table that could be perceived as fresh and new and original. You are, as you sit across from me, you're a large man with a shaved head and long facial hair. And I don't
think it's that long.
You kind of trimmed it back, actually, a little bit.
I
guess what I'm saying is, has anyone, a consultant perhaps, said to you, you know, John, as long as you're running for Senate, you need to be a little more buttoned down and wear a suit? And would it matter to you if someone did say that?
No,
to you?
I a lot's been written about my appearance, and my appearance is a double-edged sword, without a doubt. I tell people on the campaign trail, I was in Philly a couple weeks ago, and I was walking to an event in the evening from my hotel, and I had several random strangers come up and say, "You're that guy running for the Senate, man. You're awesome. I'm voting for you." And then I've had a couple other random strangers cross the street and look at me like I was going to mug them. So my appearance has its ups and my appearance has its downs. And most importantly, it's mostly been all upside, because I have I joke that I have 100% candidate recall. And there isn't been anywhere in the state that I have gone on this campaign where I'm not recognized. That could be a grocery store in King of Prussia. That can be downtown Philadelphia. That is in downtown Scranton, or even at the farm show back in, I guess that was January or February. We had over a dozen people stop and say hello. So, overall, my unusual appearance, I certainly would be the tallest person ever run for the office, and certainly the most unusual. But it's never about my appearance or lack thereof. It's really just about the issues, and that's what's been my life's work up to this point.
Yeah, height didn't seem to hurt Abe Lincoln at all.
Yeah, right? And neither one of us were exactly matinee idol handsome either. My wife brings up my average, so I have her along, and I think she balances me out nice in the visual department. So, my appearance, again, without a doubt, is unusual, especially for a candidate at this level of office. But at the end of the day, the issues that are important to us are very much at the center of the debate that we're having as a party.
Sure. And I don't want to dwell too much more on the appearance, but you do wear various tattoos, which I can plainly see because you have a short sleeve shirt on. On your left arm are the numbers 15104, the Braddock zip code.
Mm-hmm.
And on your right, 5 dates of murders.
No, actually, I don't mean to cry. Actually,
it's actually
nine.
More. Nine now.
Nine, and these have accrued since I've taken office in Braddock. I've been at every one of the scene. I know the details intimately. I know exactly where they all occurred. And
why have them tattooed?
Because it started after the first one, where I was just I'd never experienced something like that before. I was at the scene of a gentleman who was delivering pizzas in my community. He was my age at the time, 36, and somebody shot him in the head over nothing. And he died on a cold, dark street corner, and he would never see his wife or his little girl, who was 2 years old at the time. And 10 years later, it was such a I still have trouble processing the cruelty involved in doing something like that to a completely innocent individual. And it stayed with me, and I put it there because this is I wanted to have it remind me and always be with me the way it was. I mean, it's etched into my mind the way it is into my skin, and I've never gotten over it. I'll never get over it, and there's something wrong with me if I ever get over any of them. They have one thing in two things in common. They're all African American lives, and they all were just all senseless, and it just didn't have to occur. And to me, it's been a roster of the tragedy that occurs in communities like mine, but also symbolic of a triumph, whereas we went 5.5 years without the loss of life in our community. So it's been the single most difficult thing to process as being mayor of our community.
So if you become a U.S. senator, there's a debate about what we should do about guns in America. Mm-hmm. You know that. What could you do from a U.S. Senate seat to prevent senseless killings from happening?
Well, the
What should be done?
Well, what should be done is that we have to acknowledge guns in this country are what they are. They're a significant health hazard, for the lack of a better phrase. And we need to take on the gun lobby the way we finally took on and broke the tobacco lobby, where we understand that it's going to take significant legislation and political will to overcome the influence of the NRA. And the NRA remains dominant and powerful because they are able to channel tens of millions of dollars into this race. And until we get big money out of politics through Citizens United, it's going to continue as such. My theoretical opponent in the general election would be Pat Toomey, and they spent well over $2 million in 2010 to help get him elected, and this was pre-Citizens United. So the NRA is powerful, even though the overwhelming majority of gun owners and Americans want to see common sense legislation passed. But because they've got Congress on such lockdown because of the money issue, it's able to I mean, if we can't change it after Sandy Hook and the horror of 23 children being systematically mowed down by an assault rifle, that right there alone is the single most depressing fact of the influence of money in politics, in my opinion.
Earlier this year, in January, in fact, you announced that you are endorsing Bernie Sanders for president. Why mm-hmm. Bernie Sanders?
Well, I think I have to go back to 2008 when I was the only elected official mayor in Western Pennsylvania to endorse Barack Obama for the presidency. The entire state was lined up for then Senator Clinton, and I endorsed Barack Obama because I believed that he was the right candidate for the job. I believed that he was where the party was at, and I believed he was the direction that the party should go. And I like to think time has proven that a wise decision. I think he's been an outstanding president and will be remembered as one of the greats. And in 2016, I believe Bernie Sanders is where the party is and the direction where it should go. And whether he wins or not is almost beside the fact, because he has already had a profound impact on the rhetoric from Hillary Clinton in this race as well too. So I just think that he has helped refocus the values of where I think the Democratic Party should be, and we need to run. We need to be proud on these issues and our accomplishments. And Senate candidates that you refuse to even say whether or not they voted for the president and these kind of things. I'm proud to say I supported and endorsed Barack Obama. He's been an amazing president, and I'm proud to do the same with Bernie Sanders.
And you've talked earlier in our discussion about issues of inequity. There is, Bernie Sanders' belief that there is a tremendous economic disparity in America, and he's not the only one articulating this. What would you do as a U.S. senator to address that? And would Sanders describes himself as a democratic socialist? Would some form of socialism, assuming that you don't think that that's a dirty word, that some form of that would help in your efforts to create more of an equity in the American economy?
Well, no, I'm not going to get bogged down in labels. I think first and foremost, we need to acknowledge that we need a living wage that people can actually have some semblance of hope to live on.
What is a living wage?
The living wage to me should be at least $15 an hour. And to me, that's the floor, not the ceiling. I go everywhere I go across the state in this campaign, I ask people, it's like, who here can live off $8 or $9 an hour? And there isn't one single hand that goes up. And it's like, why do we in this country pretend that we are able to live off that amount of money? And Walmart, for example, costs American taxpayers over $6 billion a year because that's what their employees require in government assistance and benefits in order to make up the difference that they're not being paid to work. And I don't consider that a radical idea to, if you work full time, to not live in poverty. And I forget the name of the woman. She was a union activist. It's like, yeah, I need bread, but roses are nice too. I mean, that's just getting by, and this all out assault on unions that from the right as well. It's like, I've never met a greedy union member in all my years. They just want to participate in the American dream, the middle class dream, have a car or two in the driveway or garage, send their kids to college if they want, and take a vacation. So, you know, we in this country, if we want to improve the economic lot, we have to start standing up for principles. And what underpins all of that is unions. What underpins all that is a living wage. And what underpins that also is that we have to stop taking our marching orders from the moneyed class in Wall Street. And the best way we can do that is to attack this horrible ruling called Citizens United that gets big money out of politics. And that is one of my key, if not the most important litmus tests that I would impose on any Supreme Court nominee.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and my guest is Braddock Mayor John Fetterman, who is running for U.S. Senate. Let's go to Mark in Pittsburgh at 412-246-2002. Hi, Mark. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. Go ahead.
I was just curious. By the way, I'm very much in favor of your position. I've been watching what you've done in Braddock. If you can represent us in the United States and operate in Washington, more power to you. You got my vote. And I also hope that Bernie gets in, because I think he would open up the doors and make things more possible. But the question I had relates to that. How effective do you think you'll be able to be, given the current state in Washington, D.C., with all the money controlling things, and particularly in the Senate?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. And when I'm out campaigning, I tell people a variation on the what I believe was an honest answer, what I gave to people in 2005 when I was elected, is that I can't make Braddock exactly what it was. I can't bring back the 14 furniture stores and 3 movie theaters and 8 car dealerships that it had. But that doesn't release me from the obligation to make Braddock better. That doesn't release me from the moral imperative to try. And it's the same thing with reforming the Senate and reforming Washington's culture. It's like no person, one person, man or woman, can go to Washington and undo or reform it instantaneously. President Obama is on the record as saying recently that he vastly overestimated the influence of his office. And as a senator, you're one of 100 voices. And as frustrating as it is to our side, the other side gets a vote. So, but that doesn't mean that we can't make it better. That doesn't mean we can't advocate for these things. And I very much want to be a champion against inequality and for Pennsylvania's forgotten cities, the same way, say, Elizabeth Warren has championed Wall Street reform. And if you get enough of us progressive-minded individuals working together, we can begin to make some changes. We can be able to have some successes. But I would never insult a voter's intelligence by saying, if you you elect me, I can go down to Washington and change it overnight. It's just that's – if any candidate ever says that, he or she knows they're lying to you, because that's not the way Washington fundamentally works.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. Braddock Mayor John Fetterman, who is a candidate for U.S. Senate in Pennsylvania. He's running for the Democratic nomination against Joe Sestak and Katie McGinty. And we are taking your calls for Mayor Fetterman at 412-246-2002 if there's a comment or question that you'd like us to work in. Also, we are at WESA at ESSPGH, and or I should say ESSPGH at WESA.FM, and on Twitter at ESSPGH. And we have a tweet from David who brought up something that is an important issue in this race. What can be done on the federal level to help create slash sustain affordable housing in cities like Braddock? Mayor Fetterman, you've said that affordable housing needs to be a national priority. Mm-hmm. How would you address it?
Well, affordable housing in my community, we have an abundance of affordable housing in our communities and communities in the Mon Valley. I think the real challenge for affordable housing is when you have gentrifying forces that say that are occurring right now in East Liberty. And the Penn Plaza apartments are a really sad example of that. And we have to make sure that it is a priority for all these elected officials to make sure that we take into account the people that seemingly might get displaced. And federally speaking, whatever dollars that are coming, or whatever dollars are being kicked into whatever project, from the federal government have to include that the same way it would the Davis-Bacon Act and prevailing wages and what have you. So we need to have a litmus test, benchmarks, whatever you want to call it. You know, how is this project going to impact the gentrification and how many residents, if any, is it going to displace as a result? And I think Mayor Peduto overall has done a really significantly much better job in addressing the issues and actually making it an issue and confronting it when it's applicable. And as neighborhoods become more and more attractive and they don't need governmental public dollars, it gets harder to make sure that affordable housing is a part of that. But at the end of the day, you know, we in Pittsburgh have a commitment. I've seen Mayor Peduto exercising that as well as, but the dynamic's different in my community and communities like in the Mon Valley, where wholesale abandonment is the major challenge. And I would also rather see homes being fixed up and provided low income, low interest mortgages instead of being demolished or left. North Braddock, the community that borders us to the north, has over 450 homes on their demolition list. I mean, you know, how can we have a housing crisis and still have 450 abandoned homes that without owners? So we need creative solutions. And I think we've done a lot of that in my time here in Braddock.
Let's go to Michael in Somerset at 412-246-2002. Hi, Michael. You're on with Mayor Fetterman.
All right, Mayor Fetterman, good afternoon. My name is Michael, and my question is regarding living wage. So we're a manufacturer located in Somerset, so an hour east of you folks, but have a good idea of what it costs for full-time employees, benefits, all of the good stuff that goes along with that in a manufacturing environment for heavy trucks and trailers. I have a daughter that's 17 years old, and her mother and I's goal for her is to get her used to working and paying for fuel, paying for insurance, and, as a young person, getting her feet wet in life.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just, I'd like to get an understanding of how you feel about justifying $15 an hour for, somebody that is employed in making sandwiches and, those jobs that you start out in life in.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, I mean,
supporting a family.
One, it sounds like you're raising a great daughter and you're really teaching her the value of hard work. And I think one of the key tenets of teaching someone hard work is that hard work should pay. And when they're making $8 an hour, it's hard to justify that hard work does pay because you're not able to pay for much as a result of that. And unfortunately, I don't know why people there seems to be a perception among certain people that making sandwiches or working at McDonald's isn't a noble task. I mean, these are all important jobs, and they're sometimes greeted with derision. And it's like, I like to know that the people that are helping take care of me, regardless of what they're doing, are able to take care of themselves. And to me, of course, it's the dynamics different than with a 16-year-old daughter who's living at home versus. But the reality is that your average fast food worker is in his or her late 20s. I believe it's 29 or maybe even 30 years in age. And that's not a 16-year-old living at home under their parents. And these are jobs that people are getting because there aren't enough jobs, or that's the jobs that are available to them, or that's where they can get to on a antiquated public transportation system. So given that's the reality, then I do support that. And if that means you would stop going to McDonald's if they're an extra value meal combo went up 50 or 70 cents, I just don't fundamentally believe that that's going to be the case. You know, we all adjust to the new order of things. And if they had pegged the minimum wage to inflation, I believe it would be in excess of $15 an hour if that was the case. But we all have to acknowledge in this country that you have no chance of raising a family in any kind of dignified, secure manner if you work for anything less than the $15 an hour minimum wage. And we as a society pay for it regardless, whether it's like you can pay somebody $8 an hour to make burgers, but then you're going to have to pay in taxes or food stamps, whether it's or Section 8. It's like you can't defy the basic laws of physics, and you need a certain amount of money to live. And minimum wage and in that range just doesn't come anywhere close to it.
Politicians like Bernie Sanders support single-payer health care. What are your priorities when it comes to health care?
Well, my priorities to health care is to make sure that everybody has it. And I would love to see the United States join the rest of every other industrialized nation in providing health care. I mean, in my role in Braddock, we had a very unique situation happen where most people that are in the sound of my voice are familiar with UPMC, and most people know that UPMC decided in 2009 to close our hospital and to walk away. And it was an argument or a debate whether is access to healthcare a right or is access to healthcare a privilege. And that sparked a 5-year fight with myself and the community. And thank goodness we had Highmark and Allegheny Health Network step up. And now we have the finest urgent care center facility in Western PA. And we have that because of...
Is urgent care the answer, though?
Urgent care isn't the perfect answer, but it has saved dozens of lives by people coming in, including my own campaign treasurer. She was feeling ill and wasn't behaving normally, and I insisted she brought her in, and they found out that her blood pressure was sky high, and she was having a mild stroke, and they immediately sent her to the hospital, and it probably saved her life and saved her from a massive stroke. And you know, we need access to health care, and the Affordable Care Act gave 17 million people insurance, my family being two of them. My wife and I didn't have health insurance until we had the Affordable Care Act. And it saved us from a massive catastrophic medical bill when my wife broke a bone in her foot. So the ideal is that we have a single payer system where everybody is entitled to health care. But the Affordable Care Act was a great start, and we can improve it incrementally or replace it depending on what the political will is and what we're able to get through Congress.
When UPMC closed its Braddock Hospital, some in Braddock directed their frustrations at you. Mm-hmm. Is there more that you could have done to prevent the closing of that hospital in Braddock? And if so, what might it have been?
Well, there wasn't anything more I could have done. We had the royal flush of elected officials, you know, sitting in UPMC's boardroom pleading to keep the hospital open, and it fell on deaf ears. So at the end of the day, the hospital closing, I liken it to a really difficult divorce. It's painful, but when it's over, you're able to move on, and that's exactly what we did in Braddock. We moved on. We have a beautiful urgent care center that's literally helping save people's lives in Braddock. We have new affordable mixed-income housing. We have new retail spaces for business in Braddock. So I dare say we're actually stronger after the struggle with UPMC, and only because of great partners like Highmark and Allegheny County Economic Development that helped step in and invest in Braddock after UPMC decided to leave.
We have two callers on the line. I want to get to both of them, but we're down to just a couple minutes. So Casey, we'll start with Casey in Beaver County. If you can go as quickly as you can, Casey, with your question for Mayor Fetterman.
Okay, Mayor, first let me say that I admire what you're trying to do. I also have to say that you're much farther to the left than I am. But mm-hmm. My question is, you're always... say you're fighting for equality. I'm just not sure what that means for all the candidates that are calling for equality. Does that mean that everyone has an equal opportunity to go to school to do these kind of things, or does that mean that we take everything that everybody has and split it up equally?
Good question.
Where in the middle of that do you guys fall?
Good question.
Well, I mean, of course we're not talking, no one's talking about taking everybody has collectively and throwing it in a pile and dividing it up equally. What I am saying is that, you know, the core message of my campaign is that your zip code should not determine your destiny. You know, we in this country, as in Allegheny County, have an enormous disparity in our communities. You have extraordinarily wealthy communities like Sewickley at the top of that socioeconomic ladder, and you have Braddock at the bottom of that ladder. And I'm not not suggesting that we make Sewickley any less prosperous than it is, but we shouldn't have communities that are struggling on the margins, say Braddock or Rankin or McKeesport or Clareton. So my campaign's message is that, of course, we can't have pure equality, but we shouldn't have such vast inequality and disparity.
Peter in Point Breeze, we've got 30 seconds for a quick comment from you. You have to be quick. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks. I appreciate you taking my call. I had a question regarding the gun issue. I'm also a gun owner who's sympathetic to gun regulations. However, when people like yourself talk about it, they seldom give specifics.
What is your question, Peter? We're running out of time.
The interviewer asked you what specifics you would do, and you talked about dead kids. So I guess I'm wondering, what indeed are the specific regulations you'd like to put
in place? Peter, we've got about 15 seconds for that.
I mean, I didn't talk about, that's.
You're going to let that one go. Yeah. All right. Well, Peter, sorry we couldn't get to more of your call. And I want to thank the people who did call and join the conversation with Braddock Mayor John Fetterman, who's been our guest. He's a candidate for the Democratic nomination for U.S. Senate in Pennsylvania. Mayor Fetterman, thanks for joining us. Thanks for being with us today here in studio. We appreciate it.
The pleasure was entirely mine. Thank you for having me.
I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Thanks for listening. Until tomorrow, so long for now.